End of the week episode here on Dunked On Prime. First, we got to get to some news that has piled up on us, and then we'll talk the Pacific Division, at least some of the teams, at the trade deadline. Let's get rolling here. What do we need to talk about?
Well, let's start with a team that is actually in the Pacific Division that, of course, we'll get that coverage later on, and that's the Phoenix Suns. Encouraging news that Cam Johnson is going to, looks like he's going to return on Thursday. He underwent surgery to remove part of his right meniscus in early November. This is a fast return, though not like incomprehensibly fast. And for Cam Johnson, we talked about how a long time when he got hurt about which of the surgeries would he have, and some of it was going to be dictated by what they saw in the knee when they went in. But for Johnson now, he has the opportunity to play the second half of the season. Hopefully he can stay healthy and reestablish his value ahead of restricted free agency.
Yeah, the Suns desperately need some of these returns. We haven't heard anything on the return of Devin Booker. He's coming up now on 3 weeks out. They're talking about it minimum 4 weeks for him, but just anybody else who can do something as a scorer would really help Phoenix. And this will be an interesting chance for Cam Johnson. Unfortunately, trying to jump back in into a larger role than you had when you left, coming off of the surgery, is not an ideal situation to be in. And hopefully Chris Paul possibly coming back against the Nets could help them as well. I mean, they've just been so unbelievably injured, where they've had these games with no point guard. We still have Campaign out, obviously. Booker is out. Landry Shamet came back on Monday after he missed three games with the sore right hip. So they've just been absolutely struggling, and they got completely destroyed by the Grizz in the third quarter on Martin Luther King Day. So yeah, it would be great to see Cam Johnson back, but he'll surely be on the no back-to-back plan. He'll surely be on a minutes limit for a while. So expecting him to make a huge difference for them right away, it probably isn't fair to him.
That's totally reasonable. And the good thing, though, is that we're still a long way from the end of the season. Even the All-Star break, it's still a little ways out. That could be useful for Johnson. A couple other Suns notes. Landry Shamet missed three games with a sore right hip, but he returned Monday. And then Josh Okogie, in that Monday loss to the Grizzlies, he got hit in the face by DeAndre Jordan's elbow. Yes, that's a teammate. And he has a nasal fracture.
Not a teammate.
Okogie and DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, you said Jordan.
Oh, I meant DeAndre Ayton.
Did he? I guess they didn't play the Nuggets anyway, but
yeah, they didn't. Yes. And so that means Okogie's going to be out at least for Thursday. We don't really have a timeline after that. I don't think it's going to be an extended absence from what we know, but he is out.
Yeah, and it's tough to play with those, particularly he's got a hard-nosed style. What else we got here?
Couple of returns, but we could start in DC, where Bradley Beal is back after having missed five games with a left hamstring strain. The Washington Wizards, as we're recording this, looks like they're going to walk away with a victory in Madison Square Garden over the Knicks. They're up 15 with 4 minutes to go. We've seen weird stuff happen. I don't think that's going to. And then we don't usually go too much into trade scuttlebutt, but this one is notable in the sense that we've never heard Rui Hachimura's name before in reporting. And Hachimura, a pending restricted free agent, and somebody who, like, there you could tie this in with the idea, potentially, if you want to game it out, that the Wizards have the likely unrestricted free agency by declining player options of Kristaps Porzingis and Kyle Kuzma. Whether it's that they don't think they have the minutes or the money to retain all three of those. But considering how high the Wizards are on Hachimura and how high they are, it seems like, relative to everyone else, notable that there is even some reporting that he's on the market.
Yeah, and surely they are wise to take a look at that. And the idea of Porzingis, Kuzma, and Hachimura all being free agents, having at least some overlap with one another, particularly Kuzma and Hachimura, it does seem like maybe a choice needs to be made there. And they would be wise to listen to potential trade offers for all three of those guys. Though Porzingis, you feel like he's been a find for them. They probably want to bring him back. But the price could get interesting. Let's turn to New Orleans here. And reporting out of there a couple days ago from Christian Clark, who breaks a lot of great stuff out of New Orleans, that there's some frustration within the Pelicans with Brandon Ingram and the fact that he has not yet returned. There was hope, I can't remember whether that came from Ingram himself or the organization, that he was going to return on this five-game road trip. He wasn't able to do it, and he spoke on the healing process. He said he needs more confidence pushing off. I'm trying to be explosive, trying to be myself. That's the biggest thing. If I don't feel like myself, then I know it's not time to be on the floor. Some days he feels really good, some days he feels bad. So he says when he feels feels 100%, he will give it a go. And Pels are playing again tonight with no Ingram.
They are, and Herb Jones is still out with a right lower back contusion. He last played on January 9th. So multiple players that are injured in the same spot, and of course Zion is still missing time as well. That can be hard to handle, and the Pelicans are getting crushed by the Miami Heat, a team that with their defensive schemes can give them a lot of trouble, particularly with, you know, no Zion Williamson. The Knicks, we brought up that Wizards-Knicks game. Part of the another thing that changed it, Mitchell Robinson sprained his right thumb during the contest and did not return. We, of course, don't have severity or timeline yet because that injury just occurred before we record it. Larry Markkanen has now returned. He missed two straight for the Jazz with a lower hip contusion. Oh, sorry, a left hip contusion. And Kelly Olynyk, I talked to the Martin Luther King Day wrap-up about how much they missed him as well. Olynyk is still out with a left ankle sprain. So good to get Markkanen back, still missing Olynyk.
Yeah, good to see that it wasn't a long-term issue for Markkanen. And I think that's been an underrated story for him as far as why he's been able to have the improvement that he's had. That it seemed when he was with the Bulls in particular, whenever he would get going a little bit, he would suffer some sort of an injury, have a setback, and be out for 2 weeks or a month or something like that, and then have to start over from square one. So there definitely is a history there with his injuries, and great to see that he's going to be back to continue his all-star push.
Speaking of all-star pushes, unfortunately, Domantas Sabonis doesn't get to continue that on Wednesday. He is out with a non-COVID illness. So is Matthew Dellavedova. Rashawn Holmes is starting in Sabonis' stead. We'll see how that goes. For the Spurs, Keldon Johnson has missed some time with left hamstring tightness. He played on Wednesday against the Grizzlies. And then from Shams Charania's inside pass piece at The Athletic earlier in the week, we did get, let's call it formal confirmation, that the Spurs offered Jakob Poeltl the four-year, $58 million extension that they were allowed to offer using the league's still messed up extension system for players that aren't, you know, max caliber. And in the piece, Shams also included that rival executives believe that Poeltl will get close to $20 million a year. Personally, I will believe that when I see it. Poeltl is, especially considering the rim protection stuff has been worse this year, there aren't that many teams with cap space. It's possible. I'm not saying it's outside the realm, but that's a lot of money for Poeltl.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where he falls when we do our center rankings. Perhaps there's a feeling again that, hey, by the end of this contract, $20 million, it's going to be nothing. That's like below average starter money by the time, if he goes out another 4 years, the last two of them will be under the new TV contract. Again, I think more in the $15 million range, particularly because he just hasn't had a great year. And the Spurs, he's just kind of been in purgatory with the Spurs. Now, if he gets traded somewhere, that actually makes me think that he's more likely to do better because that team has identified him. They'll probably have had some conversations about what he's looking for in that contract. It is interesting, though. Yeah, I mean, that 4 for 58, that's $15 million a year. So maybe he'll want a shorter-term deal to get back out on the market again. It's not like it wouldn't have been crazy of him to take that, I don't think, for a guy who hasn't made that much money. But yeah, I mean, the $20 million part, it's just interesting to me. There just are not that many. If you're trading for him, you're a contender, and it's just hard to really feel great about him as a guy who's going to play more than 20 or 25 minutes a game in the playoffs due to fouls or free throws or just the lack of versatility. And so, yeah, you're potentially in a situation where you don't want to pay someone who's playing 20 or 25 minutes a game $20 million. But he more maybe would help another team to get better defensively, but their defense has also been terrible this year, the Spurs, even though it's been a weird situation. So, yeah, that'll be a good WATFO, actually. Maybe we'll do it after the trade deadline once we see what happens to him.
We still don't know, as of when we're recording this, whether Anthony Edwards is going to play against the Pistons. He's been listed as questionable with left hip soreness. So he was initially questionable and then was cleared in their game on, I believe that was Sunday. So it's kind of a, but he only, so we'll keep an eye on that with Edwards. He's been dealing with this hip soreness for a little while now. Rudy Gobert, who re-aggravated his right groin issue, not surprising that he will not play Wednesday against the Nuggets. Austin Rivers is out with a left knee contusion. And then, especially as somebody who loves Jordan McLaughlin, unfortunate clarification from Chris Finch that a report had come out that McLaughlin is weeks away. And then Jace Frederick of the Pioneer Press asked Finch about it. And he said that McLaughlin won't be back anytime soon. So they're having to handle that in other ways.
That is a crazy long absence for a calf injury. He's been out 6 weeks now. I guess it's year of the calf for the Wolves. We also still haven't heard anything about Karl-Anthony Towns being right. close either. He's getting close to like the 6 week mark now with that 4 to 6 week calf injury.
He is. So the timeline for all of these Timberwolves and them getting healthy would make a big difference for their push. And then another nugget from Shams' Inside Pass piece is that the way he phrased it is the Timberwolves have a major decision to make with D'Angelo Russell. He's on an expiring contract, no signs of an extension. So they've been exploring trade possibilities while prioritizing another point guard. One rumor that was not in his piece, but was in another one, is potentially discussing something with the Jazz about Mike Conley, which for Minnesota, basically you can, if you're assuming you're going to keep Conley for the next year, then you have that kind of salary spot filled for another year, that maybe you would do another trade like that, or you just keep Conley and hope that you can re-sign him. But he's of course significantly older.
Well, but I think if you're the Jazz, like, what's my incentive to make that deal? You want me to just trade you Conley for Russell? No thanks. Why would I want to do that?
Especially because the added financial flexibility doesn't make that much of a difference for the Jazz. They could theoretically spend, but what are they going to do with that spending power?
Yeah, for the $14 million guarantee of Conley, I think they want to just keep Conley around. Like, he's played well. They've played well. Like, he's a great vet there. That's someone that you want to treat right, who signed in Utah, wanted to be there. So, for Minnesota, though, I do understand the urgency. This is mentioned in the reporting that they are going to lose that salary slot essentially if they let Russell go. They're kind of in the bird rights trap with him. He's better than probably whoever else they could bring in, you would think, if they just had the mid-level. So yeah, trading for someone else who makes money that is, you like, even as much or better than Russell, because Russell's going to want a long contract in theory. Maybe there'll be a compromise on a shorter term deal, because I don't see anyone else who wants to pay Russell, you know, $20 million or like good starter money necessarily, or at least would have that as a priority compared to the Wolves. But certainly I would love to try to trade D'Angelo Russell, but what are you including with that? They used all their assets already.
They really, really did. That same Inside Pass piece has the note that Anthony Davis is hoping, emphasis on hoping here, to be back by early February. That would allow Davis to play in some games before All-Star. I'd love to see him back sooner. And that would also jibe with potentially him returning around the trade deadline. We don't know what in the world the Lakers are going to do there. We will talk about it soon.
Yeah, I think for Davis, the idea is that he's now getting to be pain-free, had that stress reaction in the navicular, which again, you don't want to push that, because then you actually suffer a fractured navicular and you're out for a year. So it's all very tenuous. He could, if he starts feeling pain again, like there's talk that he has these bone spurs in that area as well. So he's hoping, I think they're just kind of crossing their fingers with every workout, I would guess, with him right now, that he can make it back.
The Clippers are dealing with a bunch of different injury things. Not all of them are completely new. John Wall is out 2 weeks with an abdominal injury. He got hurt on a dunk. And on top of that, there's reporting that the Clippers are discussing John Wall in trades. His contract is not guaranteed for next year. So, and he, you know, was first contract he's had with the Clippers, so he has no veto or anything like that. And the Clippers would be looking for front court depth in a trade. And one of the things that they've been going to more often now is when Paul George and Kawhi are available, which is distinctly not all the time, those lineups are not typically having a traditional point guard in them. It could be, you know, like Terrence Mann, and then Reggie Jackson's coming off the bench. And for example, in the game against the Sixers, Jackson only played 14 minutes. Wall was out. He played 0 minutes. So if we're counting those as their traditional point guards, 14 minutes total.
Yeah. So it seems like starting Terrence Mann is the direction that they've gone recently. And you mentioned Wall, really one of the more destructive offensive players in basketball this year. 50% true shooting, which is up a little bit. Can't make a jump shot, so he doesn't get guarded, right? Like the other teams have been guarding with their center sometimes when they try to go five out. And he turns it over on 17% of his possessions as well. So, I mean, it seems like if you were going to be playing more of like a pure point guard, like Rondo role or something like that, then maybe his game would make more sense. But I mean, not that the Clippers have been amazing offensively, but you can't have 27 usage and 50% true shooting on this team. And then Reggie Jackson is 20% usage. He's 52% true shooting. Like, those guys just haven't played well enough. They don't give them enough defensively. So yeah, you might as well play man and play bigger. Like, they have the wings to do it. In theory. And then, in theory. And then they also got smoked last night by the Sixers. I mean, they're in it and then they're out of it. And then Kawhi Leonard's been struggling in fourth quarters, and Joel was unstoppable in that game. So that was with PG back. PG's not playing tonight against the Jazz, second night of a back-to-back. I think Kawhi's not playing either, right? So they're about to lose that one, you would think, in Utah with Markkanen back. Yeah, it's just I feel a lot, but like the Clippers and Warriors have had pretty similar seasons so far in terms of their net rating and how they can't really get much past 500, but I definitely feel better about the Warriors going forward than the Clippers. Do you agree with that?
I do. And I reserve the right to get sold again by the Clippers because for whatever reason that always happens. But yeah, I'm not feeling as confident. I just to finish up on the Clippers health stuff, Luke Kennard has now missed five straight with a right calf injury. It sounds like he might come back. He's traveling with the team. He might come back on the road trip. And then Zubats was originally listed as questionable with a left knee contusion, but he did play against the Jazz.
Yeah, and that Kennard concerning because that is a recurrence.
Yes.
For him. For Golden State, Andre Iguodala has missed a few in a row now. He was playing well, but we saw this pattern from him last year also. I think actually might have been in the San Antonio game that he got a fast break dunk. It seems like whenever he takes off of 1 foot for a dunk that he always seems to like kind of hurt himself a little bit. Maybe he should just stick to 2 foot dunks instead. Or it could just be a wear and tear thing. But and Steve Kerr got him back. He's like, thank God. Yeah, we're going to talk more about the Warriors in a second here and what they need. But I think it's pretty telling that Steve Kerr is like, yeah, we need Andre back in the lineup. Like, he's like basically our backup four man now. And they also have defended pretty well in the limited time he was out there. But
he's also their third string five at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really count on him. Any other injury news for the Warriors? I think like Kuminga, Wiseman.
Nothing new. Kuminga and Wiseman are still out. Kuminga practiced again on their off day before the Celtics game. But it looks like he's not going to be back for that game. And then Wiseman still is not practicing. Jermichael Green is doubtful and he's missed 14 straight.
Yeah, the combination of first COVID and then an infection for Jermichael Green.
The Houston Rockets had a couple of suspensions, Jayshon Tate and Jalen Green, for leaving the bench during an altercation. Those have already been served since the last time we did news. Kevin Porter Jr. has now missed four straight with a left foot contusion. He did not play Wednesday against the Hornets. And then I don't know severity, but Jabari Smith Jr. left that same game against the Hornets with an ankle sprain. Obviously don't know severity and timing. It just happened.
For Dallas, encouraging news that Moxie Kleba telling the team broadcast he's hoping to be back before the All-Star break with that surgery.
That's stunning.
Yeah, that is really... And now they may just hold him off until afterwards, but even if he comes back right after the break, I mean, that would be... We were worried he's going to be out for the season, that he had the Chris Middleton surgery on that torn hamstring tendon, but that would be great if he's able to come back and just give them a little bit more of a defensive element. They've been playing relatively well at times when they've had everyone available, even without Kleba. And Dorian Finney-Smith is the other guy who's been missing. He and Josh Green returned against the Hawks Wednesday. Finney-Smith had missed a month with a right groin strain, and Green had also been out over a month sprained right elbow, which is kind of too bad for him. We'll have to keep an eye on it because he'd been shooting it a lot better. We'll see if that is affected by the return from the sprained right elbow. But as soon as those guys come back, Tim Hardaway Jr. is now going to miss two straight after he sprained his ankle in Portland.
Yes, and we don't have a timetable yet on him. Speaking of no timetables, Gordon Hayward has now missed eight straight with left hamstring soreness. We haven't heard anything on a timeline with him. Cody Martin has now missed two straight with what has been classified as left knee soreness, but what is concerning there is it's the same knee that he had surgery on earlier in this season, so his availability is TBD, kind of moving forward. And of course Kelly Oubre is already out for them, so that's a lot of players in kind of a similar positional group.
Yeah, for Martin, you never know. This could be the start where any soreness at all, they're just ruling him out because of where they are in the standings right now.
Absolutely possible. For the Hornets could be motivated in that front. The Brooklyn Nets lost to the San Antonio Spurs on Tuesday, in part because Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving both didn't play. Durant still missing time with his MCL issue. Kyrie Irving, it was right calf soreness, but the good news is he is probable for their game against Phoenix on Thursday. Seth Curry replaced Irving in the starting lineup. And then Jaylen Brown has missed about a week with left adductor tightness. He was a full participant in Wednesday's practice and is questionable for their second finals rematch Thursday against Golden State.
That'll be a really interesting one to watch. I think obviously after Golden State beat them in San Francisco, Boston is going to be very motivated to come out, but Golden State should have most of their team available as well. I imagine that's a back-to-back as well, but I imagine Klay Thompson will play against Boston, you would think. All right, Danny, you put these in order of whichever ones in these divisions you think are the most interesting. So where are we starting?
I think we start with the Suns. And Phoenix, they're roughly $17 million over the tax line now. That is incredibly significant. The transfer of ownership still has not yet happened. Appetite for that, still don't know. The Suns do not have any available trade exceptions. And the Suns are also, I believe, the only team in the NBA that has all of their own picks and zero extras. So they can follow the normal Stepien rules and everything
else. For both first and second round picks, they have no incoming out or outgoing picks of any kind.
And so that means the Suns have a lot of flexibility. And to me, the obvious priority is finding a home for Jay Crowder. He hasn't played for the team at all this year. They also haven't gotten anything from his slot because they haven't traded him or done anything with Crowder yet. But that's a priority. Like, you need to get something done. He's on an expiring contract. That's just, I mean, whatever happens, happens. But it's starting in part just because they've been losing so much due to they've been shorthanded of whether this is a larger clarification point. And I don't want to dwell too much on this, but I thought that Shams reporting that the Suns were a potential suitor for Fred VanVleet was a little bit fascinating because there isn't a clear way for them to do it. And so this could potentially be James Jones or somebody within the organization kind of maybe thinking about the next step. And if the solution next to Devin Booker is not Chris Paul, they're going to have to bring somebody in because they haven't drafted somebody over the last couple of years. And my inclination is that the Suns don't make that big move, but I don't think it's off the table.
Well, let's review quickly what some of the reporting has been on their ownership structure and the approval of trades. I think Brian Windhorst has had the most reporting on this. Essentially, it's been kind of a three-headed monster. And James Jones, I think, isn't even one of the three heads. And he is not allowed to really communicate with Robert Sarver, in theory, due to the terms of his suspension. But Sarver still does have to approve any trade for any player who makes more than the mid-level. And if they're going to move Jay Crowder or Dario Saric or something like that, do anything other than dumping money, even if they're, I think the way I read that is, even if they send out more money than they're taking back, if they are taking back a player who makes more than the mid-level, Robert Sarver has to sign off. Then Sarver's probably not going to do anything without Ishbia also signing off. And then I think there's, I forget the guy's name, Sam something, who's like the actual interim governor of the team right now, who would have to sign off as well. And the Suns aren't even necessarily known for being one of these teams that like really beats the bushes in terms of trades and puts in a ton of work on this type of stuff as well. So, and apparently the reason some of this reporting has come out is maybe there have been trades that Suns ownership that Jones wanted to do that ownership or the various forms of ownership haven't approved. So it seems like kind of a mess. I mean, just because of that, and it seems unlikely that Ishbia could take full control prior to February 9th, and then he's going to kind of need to get up to speed. I don't think you want to take full control and then make a trade like that 2 days later that's going to be massive for the franchise. So all of that militates basically in favor of them not doing anything of particular significance.
I agree. And could they make a move involving DeAndre Ayton? Possible. Move involving Chris Paul? Possibly. Crowder is the most obvious, and you can get into that. And then whether the Suns want to use this opportunity to clarify their books moving forward, there will be an important decision in terms of how much they're willing to spend and who they want to spend on in the 2023 offseason. Moving early could be an advantage, but I don't think it is with somebody like Landry Shamet, who has a fully guaranteed $10.3 million for next season, because that team has to pay him for longer, and it's not like Shamet has done so well this year that you're striking while the iron is hot. So yeah, I think it could be a quiet deadline, but because of their potential to theoretically shake things up, I think the Suns are the most compelling team, even if I think the most likely outcome is very little.
And it would be lovely for the Suns if they could get Devin Booker back, get Chris Paul back, get Cam Johnson back, maybe even possibly Cam Payne. We don't know anything about his situation. And at least like go on a little bit of run. I mean, they flashed very good form when they were fully healthy earlier in the year. And while that fell off to some degree, even before Booker went down, they've been a complete disaster. And also there's the possibility that they could lose another five games in a row and be what, like 8 games under 500 or something? Like they're 3 games under right now, right?
Yeah, they're 21 and 24 as we record this, and they're not playing tonight, so that's what they'll be.
So a lot could happen here between now and the trade deadline. Like they could get their guys back, they could get some nice wins, they could make ownership say, hey, this is, let's actually try to build this team up a little bit. But then who has the incentive to do that? There's also the little issue that they are $17 million into the tax with a $35 million tax payment right now. And I'm sure they would love to move on from the likes of Dario Saric, who is not really in their rotation when they're healthy and has not played well this year, coming off the torn ACL. So that's another thing. But then to move Saric just into space, could they do that for like a couple of seconds? That might be worth doing, potentially, if they were to excise Saric from their books. That would lower them down to a much more manageable tax payment. That would save them, Danny, $22 million in tax and probably about $3 million in salary or so. So $25 million bucks. That's a pretty good use of a couple of seconds if a team like the Spurs or the Pacers wanted to take him on for that return. I don't know if that would be enough to get that done or not. So I've been predicting that Saric would be gone for a long time. I've been wrong about that. But it seems like, particularly unless they like go on a run and they're looking really competitive, you would think if there was just an owner who was planning on owning the team for a while, you'd want to just save that money. However, the dynamic ownership situation kind of skews those incentives also.
It does. Who's fighting for it, who's not fighting for it will linger. If the Suns were to kind of like treat this as a normal team, I would be looking for forward depth, though. Incidentally, Saric is one of the guys you could trade, just somebody else who could be in the mix and a different backup point guard. I mean, campaign when he's healthy can fill the role, but especially if Chris Paul is taking a step or two back, that becomes a potential issue whether you resolve it now or you resolve it later. Payne only has a late partial guarantee for next year.
And also just even someone who's healthy enough that when Paul misses games or when he can't play that many minutes, I mean, Payne is a massive question mark with his own health, with his perpetually sore feet. So obviously the joke writes itself that they should try to trade for someone like Jay Crowder. But as far as like who's out there, the three-way trade of potential Milwaukee and Houston and them to get Eric Gordon. Like Eric Gordon would be a pretty decent fit. He could kind of play some backup point guard. Like he would fit okay in the backcourt with Booker, give him a little bit of size. But they would certainly have to, and the charge could probably get sent out in that deal. But of course, that's one that would have to be approved by ownership. I don't see anyone else among the obviously available guys. You know, would they go the Kelly Oubre, Jalen McDaniels route potentially? This doesn't seem like a good Gordon Hayward team because I just don't think they have enough salary to send out necessarily. And maybe if Charlotte just wanted to save a little bit of money for next year, and you could go like Shamet, Saric, and Payne to get Gordon Hayward and just hope he can get healthy and pay a little bit more money for guys who weren't going to be part of what you're doing and save Charlotte a little bit of money next year. Is that something that they'd be interested in? But so they could kind of go the distressed assets route just to get some more bodies on the wing who might be an upgrade on the likes of Torrey Craig.
Yeah, there's definitely merit to that approach. Who do you think is the most likely son to be traded?
I guess it would have to be Crowder, right?
Yeah, I agree.
And I guess, quite frankly, I noted how much they could save if they just moved on from Saric, especially if things spiral. Was there a team that would take Crowder into cap space? I mean, you probably, again, would have to get a third team involved there. A team like the Bucks would have to send someone out, take back Crowder, and then send someone into the space or a trade exception of another team, which I don't even think there is a large enough trade exception out there to take in $10 million at this point.
I think there might technically be a couple, but they're not necessarily by teams that are interested in using them. I'd have to go through the full list.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't have much else to say on these. I mean, they do have the other thing to consider too is like, do you want to? They haven't really made any of these like give up a first during the season type of transactions, even though they've been good. I think in the market that they have, particularly with Ishbia coming in, particularly with maybe there being a feeling that this is a lost year and that Chris Paul doesn't have any more, and you know, maybe that's what some of those Van Vliet rumors augur. I thought Dan wrote pretty well about that. I kind of second his take if you want to get a little more thoughts on what you think of those rumors. I think that was on Monday. But you don't want to give up one first-round pick to chase getting a little bit better this year when you think this year is over, and you want to maintain all those picks to really remake the team around maybe Devin Booker and Mikal Bridges going forward.
Yeah, I think that's completely reasonable.
Have you heard, Danny, that the LA Lakers have their 27 and 29 first round picks available for trade?
Kevin Pritchard tells me all the time.
Yeah, so the Lakers, another team that is well into the tax for a team that is not worth it at the moment for this family ownership. So they're a obvious possible tax casualty would be Kendrick Nunn. How are the Lakers fixed for assets here if they wanted to even make like a small move?
They have the Bulls 2023 second. That could potentially be of interest, especially if the Bulls make other moves before the Lakers do something else. The Lakers also have their own second in 2023. So on those kind of smaller things, they could make something happen. I mean, potentially, if they were interested. I mean, they don't have that many young guys available. They could do something involving Max Christie or Austin Reeves, but I think they want to keep those guys, and also the salary matching is pretty limited with them.
Yeah, it's a good point. Both those guys making the minimum or close to it. We'll just rehash it here because we've talked about it so much very briefly. The idea of trading those picks, who might be out there? I think clearly, my guess would be the Lakers management feels the same way. If there is a move that maybe not even gets you into like championship contention, but at least like solid, you know, conference championship contention with those two first round picks, that they should pull the trigger. I think ultimately I would have not pulled the trigger on the Miles Turner Buddy Hield package for those two picks. I would want to get more firepower on the wing in particular if I'm going to give those up. Obviously, you could maybe also save some money in a deal like that, and Westbrook would be the matching salary. But there just hasn't been news of players really becoming available. Another thing is like, oh, well, you know, what if you could get someone who would also be good for next season, you know, Zach LaVine type, a Bradley Beal type. Still not much indication those guys are available. Even DeMar DeRozan, right? I think we talked with the Bulls, and we will again, about how if the Lakers offer those two picks for DeRozan, I think you would probably need to do it as Chicago, because they too are just not really on a path to anywhere important. Now Zach Lowe and Dave McMenamin were talking about how LeBron, their speculation was just sucking and being out of the playoffs, that might be a no-go for LeBron wanting to stay there. But he doesn't necessarily have to be in championship contention. He just wants to be, you know, be playing some meaningful basketball in the postseason, even if they end up losing. That to me, though, if I'm Lakers management, doesn't sound particularly exciting. Like, the half measure one first round pick for Bojan Bogdanović, like, I'm not a big fan of that either. Are you?
No, I'm not.
Because I mean, this is the Lakers. You should be going for championships in theory. You know, you could say, hey, we owe it to LeBron to just be competitive. Like, I mean, all right, I guess I kind of see that. But, and again, the other problem too is, you know, fine, AD was playing really well for 15 games. Like, he and LeBron have probably played well enough at their best this year to answer the question of like whether these guys are worth saving. But then of course AD just gets hurt again, and we don't know what his status is going to be the rest of the year. And so making a win now trade before you know that AD is back and playing well again, like, that's really difficult to justify also. And then finally, this is a point that I think Dan might have made it first, that if you get to the draft this year, they could do a 3 first round pick package, because they will have the Pels pick as well. So now your problem there is you don't have as much matching salary. You would have cap space, so maybe you could just trade for someone to take them in. But even with LeBron and AD and stripped down to basically nothing else, you would be hard pressed to take in like a $40 million player. I don't know if there's even a way they could do it, frankly. Whereas now you have Westbrook's salary to trade. So those are some interesting components. Or, you know, they could just save their cap space for this summer too. That's another potential option they could go for.
And for the Lakers, that's significantly more palatable than it would be for other teams, because even though that available space, assuming LeBron and AD are there, like it's not immense, because even just the salary cap, the cap holds are significant enough to knock it in. And remember, they also do have a first round pick. It's just not their own if their own is better than the Pelicans pick. So is that enough for most teams to keep it? Probably not, but I could see Kyrie Irving or Draymond Green or somebody else being interested in taking either less than they could get out of the market or just taking what the Lakers have, because the market is so different for both of those individuals. And so that it, door number two is better for them than it is for almost anybody else. And so if the and that also, you know, that makes the think how you think about the assets a little bit different too.
What else we need to talk about on these guys?
Not a whole heck of a lot. I mean, they, you know, you brought up Kendrick Nunn, like that's kind of an obvious way to save some money. The Lonnie Walker situation is notable because this is another one of those, like, what you do with him depends on what else happens, because if they're going the cap space route, if that's kind of the decision that they're making, then it'd be very difficult for the Lakers to retain Lonnie Walker, but he also makes them better right now. So I think you listen, because that's the downside of a one-year deal, is that it's very hard to do a ton with it unless the player really wants to come back and you really want them back, and the number that you can sign them to in the Lakers case with non-bird rights is sufficient, but that's not really that big a deal overall.
Yeah, it's just, it's so interesting, particularly the cap space this offseason and the inability to make a trade with any kind of matching salary this offseason. Now you could sign guys with your cap space, and then you could make a trade after January 15th as well if you wanted to do that.
Or the hilarious, like, gargantuan Russell Westbrook sign and trade.
Oh my God. Yeah, Russ doesn't, I mean, I guess if you paid him enough, everyone will listen, but he doesn't seem like the guy I'd want to be counting on to help me trade him out of LA.
Agreed.
All right, who's next here?
Let's stay in Los Angeles and go to the LA Clippers. The Clippers are a whopping $41.7 million over the tax line. They are, incidentally, and holy crap, would this be an unbelievable thing. They are, oh no, never mind. Their trade exception is not big enough for Jay Crowder. It's just a little bit too small, even with the $100,000 wiggle room. So, but they do have this $9.7 million Ibaka trade exception. And in a normal circumstance, with a normal owner with the Clippers, it would be, you know, we already talked about the rumors that they could move John Wall for front court help. But Steve Ballmer's willingness to pay opens up the door for a lot of different things. Like last year when they traded for Robert Covington and Norman Powell, and then eventually extended Robert Covington right before free agency. So they could make bigger swings. I wouldn't put it past Lawrence Frank. This team is already just ludicrously expensive. And that is one way to I don't know, I guess you could say energize this team, because even though their conceptual ceiling is still there, if Kawhi is ever Kawhi again, and if Paul George can play more consistently, not dealing with injury management, but I'm less confident that the supporting cast is at the level they need to be as well.
So the question that, and this is probably when we should have spent more time on with the Lakers too, is just, is there a trade out there that gets them to where they want to be? And what do they need? They tried to address point guard. Like it seems like it's going to be just PG and Kawhi handling the ball a lot. We talked already about how Wall and Jackson have kind of disappointed at this point, and hopefully they get Kennard back as well. You can give him some more guard play. You know, Robert Covington has been in and out, mostly out of the rotation of late. Marcus Morris is kind of just a guy at this point. Norm Powell is, I guess, their third best player. Like, they don't really have a third best player. Maybe on some nights it's Zubats, but he's limited in terms of what he can give you versatility wise. So as crazy as it was to say we thought this would be one of the deepest teams, they still, I mean, I guess they are a deep team in terms of just guys who can play, but particularly in terms of someone who can kind of step up in nights that Paul George and Kawhi aren't playing or don't have it. They just don't really have that guy. Let's talk about what they actually have to trade here in addition to the names I mentioned, none of whom I would say are particularly sexy, other than maybe Terrence Mann, who's making $1.9 this year, and then he's got a two-year extension after that for $11 million a year. So it would be easy to trade him. But like, what's out there that the Clippers can even trade. They've got at least some picks that they can move.
They do. So they owe 24 and 26 first plus two swaps in between. So that means 28 they could do. And so it's a single first for now. They do also have all their own seconds other than 27. Plus, maybe teams interested in a young guy like BJ Boston or Jason Preston. Amir Coffey's only making about $3.5 million a year. So those guys, I think of those things as more sweeteners rather than the main thing.
Yeah, and for the Clippers, you might say, well, hey, why isn't it the same philosophy with them as it is with the Lakers, where if PG and Kawhi aren't healthy and don't prove that they're worth throwing more good money after this team, why aren't they just going to wait and have those guys like prove that they can actually be good enough to put this team in championship contention? They're just so pot committed at this point, and Ballmer just doesn't give a fuck about the money, apparently, that it's just going to be a different approach, I think. And there's still reason for hope with these guys. There's more reason for concern, I would say, but particularly given like that George and Leonard are coming off of injuries, you always say, hey, maybe they can catch lightning in a bottle, be healthy in the playoffs, and maybe Kawhi Leonard could still be one of the best players in the playoffs. You just don't know that. So I'm not sure that I would want to do too much right now, though. If I were them, I might kind of just see how this season plays out. If they start playing better over the next 3 weeks, then maybe I would change my tune. You know, there's talk that they need a backup center, that the whole five out thing just hasn't been working as well. Like, that used to be unstoppable offensively. It just hasn't been at this point. Their defense has been what's even kept them around 500. So it's hard to say that, I mean, do they need more offensive firepower? Well, then they compromise the defense. Ultimately, as you look at the team, you're just like, hey, like these guys that they have just need to play better. Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, I'm not sure what, you know, all right, we'll attach a first round pick to Marcus Morris, or like that kind of a trade, or a first round pick to Robert Covington. I'm not sure what that gets you that's making you so much better. Like, if I would be more inclined to make a trade if they'd been really good so far this year, and that you felt like, hey, they just need one more piece, which I don't feel that way about them right now. I think they need like five more pieces, and they all need to play better.
And you also need to kind of get more time to evaluate the players they have to figure out what attributes are most important with those players. It'd be great to have somebody who's in the closing five, but who are they replacing in the closing five, and what is the theory behind that? And another huge complication for the Clippers making those more ambitious trades this year is that other than Reggie Jackson, none of their significant salaries are expiring. And so if you're negotiating with Team X and you're like, okay, well, we can include Marcus Morris and Luke Kennard and all that, it's like, oh, but they don't expire. They have, you know, those two guys are combined to make over $30 million next year. So those sorts of deals could be significantly more available during the 23 offseason and during the 24 trade deadline than they are right now.
Yeah, I don't think they have the ammo to get, say, like a Fred VanVleet, even if they put in their 28 first. I mean, maybe there's something you could do, like you could do like the 28, 29 deferment, like some way to make that sexier than just the one, because they could trade 28 or 29, but not both as of now. But that, I mean, that would be you taking kind of your last swing for a while on Fred VanVleet. I mean, maybe I still think if they made Fred VanVleet available, there would just be better offers. And obviously, VanVleet would need to get paid by these guys afterwards. So there's nobody else really that's like I feel is available for one first round pick that would move the needle. Like, I don't think they have the ammo for Miles Turner, who would be a nice fit there, possibly. You know, someone like a Jay Crowder, who you mentioned, is just, he's pretty redundant with the kind of older wings that they have already. Alec Burks, I mean, fine. I mean, I guess he might be a little bit of an upgrade on what Wall and Jackson are giving them, but not enough to really move the needle in the postseason. You know, would Kelly Olynyk as a backup center? I mean, Utah seems to like him. Could they get him for some of their non-first round assets? Like, that doesn't seem very likely.
Well, yeah, and especially because the Clippers don't really have young players that are super enticing. If Danny Ainge really liked BJ Boston or Preston, then maybe. But that doesn't seem like enough to make it.
And Mann is someone that they need, right? Like, I don't think they want to move him, because then you're looking for another guy like him immediately. So, like, they'll be active in the buyout market, you would think, as well a lot of these teams. See, I don't have much else really on the Clippers. I hoped they would be good enough that we could be talking about them needing one more piece, but they're just so much needs to happen, I think, which it could happen, but I don't even really, I mean, even to get like a backup center, that seems like more of a buyout thing. You know, moving Covington for a backup center, like, is there a team that would want to do that? Like, I guess I still think that like the five out is the best that they can be eventually if they are going to get there, even though it hasn't been effective this year.
Right. Like the backup center, it is a need, especially when Zubats misses time, but it's not as much of a playoff need as it is a regular season need, because they'll solve that a different way than, and if Zubats is hurt, then you have a different problem. The Clippers also, like, they don't really have a clear player to trade in a salary dump. Like that circumstance isn't quite there. Maybe Steve Ballmer's just cool with this kind of a tax bill, but it's, you know, because the players who are the cheapest on this team are the only cheap players on the team and potentially could hold some interest. And yeah, if they really want to cut low on Boston or Preston, they could do it, I guess.
Golden State also is so far above the tax line that they can't see it anymore. They're in the repeater tax. They don't have any available exceptions. To me, there's only one goal at the deadline other than maybe just saving a little bit of money. Although even there aren't obvious choices. You know, there could be the, all right, JaMychal Green isn't working out for us, we'll pay you to take him type of move. Other than that, I don't really see, or maybe Ryan Rollins, they're just totally want to give up on at this point. Although he's so cheap because he's their draft pick that they might want to just hold on to him in that roster spot. To me, though, I am very interested in the trade market. If I'm then, I need to find someone who can shoot the ball a little bit, knows how to play, and can defend at the four position that can be in the closing five. Like, I don't feel quite secure with Anthony Lamb and Jonathan Kuminga as my only two options at that spot.
Well, you can add Andre Iguodala there, but still, you don't have that same confidence. His availability isn't quite there. And Kevon Looney will be in the mix for certain configurations, but not for others. I would also, I mean, as the Warriors, you'd love to have a good point of attack defender. They never replaced that element of what Gary Payton II brought to them, and I thought he was incredibly important in the finals. But that idea of somebody who's good enough to be a potential closing five player for the Warriors is significant. The question then becomes, are you willing to sacrifice the young players? Because yes, they could trade a future first. The Warriors owe a lightly protected first to Memphis, so they could do first allowable draft. Technically, they could do 26 or something thereafter. But A, to match the salary, and B, as the more likely sweetener, are they willing to give up some of their young players to do so? And are those young players valued highly enough around the league to bring in that quality of player?
Yeah, I would probably be thinking more of the, you know, trying to use future picks, but the first pick they could trade would be a 26. They could give up two picks, basically, is what they could trade, given that they owe that top four protected to Memphis. But the assumption will be that will go, and they could also even have the pick go from 26 and 28 to 27 and 29 if the Memphis picks its top four protected grid roll over for a year. So they do have that available. Kuminga, I think they pretty clearly want to hold on to. You know, Moses Moody, just the fact that he hasn't even with all the injuries and non-performance they've had this year, that he hasn't been able to get into the rotation, that's a big disappointment. I think he's kind of been as good or better than I expected offensively, but is really disappointed defensively. So maybe he needs a fresh home. Would another team give him first round value? I don't think so at this point. How would another team feel about James Wiseman? You know, again, you brought it up. There's just not, I don't think that you necessarily, you know, a Wiseman Moody package, what does that get you? They don't need like the greatest guy. Like, they don't need like a pure 3-and-D wing. Like, if they could just get JaMychal Green from 4 years ago, like, that would probably be enough. JaMychal Green from right now is less useful. One of the names that we've heard again for this team is Kelly Olynyk. And like, that sort of player, I have zero interest in if I'm them. Like, he needs to be able to switch and be a plus defender to close games for this
group. Because like, if the Warriors are looking for a center who doesn't switch to be in their playoff rotation, it's going to be Kevon Looney.
Yeah, who does switch a little bit, but
yeah, he's significantly better at that than Kelly Olynyk is. Like, you don't need like that box is already filled.
Yeah, and Anthony Lamb, although we've derided him early on and derided Kerr for using a two-way guy early on, he's probably actually been the best two-way guy in the league, and he'll surely be converted for the playoffs. But I don't think for their purposes at the end of a playoff game, I don't think Kelly Olynyk is better than Anthony Lamb. Like, I think, you know, Kelly Olynyk would certainly help him in the regular season. Like, he could play the DHO game and post up against mismatches and spread the floor. Like, he'd be a great offensive fit with what these guys are trying to do. But yeah, I just see trying to find a place for him to play in the playoffs for the way this team wants to defend is not very exciting. So let's put some names out there that actually could help these guys that would realistically be attainable. Let's say it's a Wiseman Moody package, and that would be quite a blow to Joe Lacob to have to move both of those guys. But, you know, let's say Wiseman is then the matching salary, which he basically has to be, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, Wiseman makes $9.6 million, and they're not the four most expensive Warriors are not getting moved: Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, and Green. So
yeah, nor is Looney. So, and then you go down to like Kuminga at 6, DiVincenzo at 4.5, Moody at 4. Jordan Poole can't really be traded because of the poison pill after he signed the extension. So yeah, I mean, it really, if they're going to get a player who's going to matter, and maybe it's just the buyout market instead, but again, like, getting someone better than Lamb in the buyout market just might not be possible. Yeah, it really has to be Wiseman, and it's just a question of how much is his value intrinsically, what else do you have to throw in with him, and, you know, even the question of salary matching there is difficult. They wanted to, the other thing too is it's like, hey, you bring in, you trade someone and you're like, oh yeah, like the trade would work, but oh, we just took on $5 million and $25 million or more in actual cash payment. Like, that's not particularly palatable either,
right? And that's a significant problem as well.
I mean, maybe Phoenix totally falling out of it would be useful to them, because then they wouldn't be mad about having to trade Jay Crowder to Golden State. But I think even to get a player like Crowder, like, I think that it'd be a tough sell for management with Wiseman at this point. Even so, he was starting to play better. Then of course he got injured again. So I mean, it's hard for me to argue as a neutral person that they should be holding on to Wiseman at this point.
Well, and one of the funniest things is, like, a couple of the teams that have players who I don't think are great fits but are potential fits would be like the Pistons, something involving Sadiq Bey and potentially bringing back Alec Burks. But the Pistons just drafted a center in the lottery.
Yeah, and all these teams fucking have centers,
right? And then another team that's kind of in that boat is, if Danny Ainge wanted to try the James Wiseman experience, they could do something involving Malik Beasley. Like, the Jazz have a bunch of capable players. Like, you could structure this a lot of different ways, but they have Walker Kessler. Like, how interested are they in, like, but the idea that, especially with Ainge, that I think might be persuasive is if they're doing something involving Malik Beasley. I mean, potentially, I don't think Jared Vanderbilt would be in this kind of trade. I think they also like Jared Vanderbilt.
I mean, that would be a fascinating one. I mean, I think it's, there's some reporting, I can't remember where it was from, that the Jazz would be looking for like a first for Jared Vanderbilt, which actually makes sense to me. So, but yeah, I mean, Walker Kessler is a better prospect to me than James Wiseman. Now, Wiseman is more offensive upside, maybe. Maybe they'd just be kind of taking a flyer on him, and the Warriors would have to throw something else in even at that point. You know, an interesting one could be Josh Richardson with the Spurs, where maybe even the Spurs would throw in a low-level asset with Richardson to get Wiseman. That's the type of team. They don't really have a center of the future. You know, the Poeltl thing, we'll see how that plays out. Poeltl's another guy, though, that doesn't, he's been talked about for the Warriors, but doesn't really make sense for them to me. I'm not even sure he's better than Looney, and just playing both of those guys in the playoffs wouldn't be great to me.
Yeah, and similarly, like, there was some reporting on Wednesday about potentially Peyton Pritchard, and Peyton Pritchard would not.
Yeah, another small guard, like, why?
Yeah.
I got one more name for you. I don't know how smart this guy plays, but he makes little enough money that you might be able to get him without trading for Wiseman. And I know Andrew Schlecht was talking about this guy as a possible deadline deal candidate. Darius Bazley with the Thunder.
Bazley's interesting. I was going to mention Jalen McDaniels.
Yeah, it seems like he's going to have a fair number of suitors. I think the problem with both, more McDaniels even than Bazley. Bazley's shown a little bit of kind of dribble game and passing game. You know, he's got like some feel, maybe, although you never know with these guys for sure until they get into the Warrior system. McDaniels, to me, is like, some of the decisions he makes while driving, like, I just don't think he's ready to play Warriors basketball. And also, they need someone that's like a little bit more beef, I think, at that position to switch to. But, you know, Bazley's, he's athletic. He could get in transition. He maybe can switch defensively. Like, he can't really shoot, but you know, they have other good shooters. Like, he could play the fake DHO game. Like, maybe that would be a thought.
The Thunder also makes sense as a team who could bring Wiseman up slowly, and that would actually actually A, have the financial flexibility, and B, have the playing flexibility to make that happen without sacrificing something concrete in the way the other teams would.
Yeah, but again, when you know, would it be Patrick Baldwin Jr. for Baisley? Would that be something that the Thunder might be?
Oh, I was assuming it'd be Wiseman and.
Well, I was thinking because Baisley makes little enough that you might be able to craft the trade without putting Wiseman in it.
Oh, that's true.
That might be more of the appeal there. You trade Jermichael Green. I guess Jermichael Green cannot be traded back to the Thunder.
The Jonas Ogauskas rule strikes again.
Yeah, that would be hilarious. Yeah. So anyway, you know, I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of any other like names that would work. But when you consider the constraints, maybe they just got to roll with Anthony Lamb and just hope that he's really that much of a find. But that's I don't love being in that position. Like, I would definitely like to have some more athleticism at that position and a little more experience. All right. One more team here. That is the Kings. And it seems like, well, they made the Sabonis trade. They gave up Halliburton. They gave up this future first that's top 10 protected in 24 for Herter, a trade that's looking pretty good so far, at least. They don't have a great bench. They don't really have a great solution at backup center. They've really struggled when Sabonis has been out. But you would hope that Holmes could get to be good enough to where he could at least give you that. But the Kings could still, you know, they've got Keegan Murray as a possible trade candidate if they wanted to go that route. You know, he's not going to get you number four pick value, I think, going forward. He's come on a little bit lately, but overall, it hasn't been an incredible rookie year for him. But the idea of them pushing in even further to really try to be a top six playoff team for the next few years is maybe an interesting one. If they wanted to go that route, maybe not specific players, but is there just a type of player that you feel if they acquired him could get them to that level?
I'd love a three that you really trusted defensively that could help give the defensive identity.
Because that's it. They got to get better defensively.
Right. And so that sort of a player, if you could do it. And the one of the challenges is that in order to execute offensively the way the Kings do, that player needs to at least be defendant. Like, they don't need to be a high volume guy, but they need to actually, you know, like, have somebody stay out there. So that narrows the field pretty significantly. And ideally, that player has the age element. So in a way, I think the more likely way for Sacramento, if they identified that the same way we did, would actually be a second draft or more of like a rolling the dice rather than an established commodity. Though, like, I mean, because like, for example, like, I don't think Jay Crowder fits that bill well enough. I think you're looking for more of a three than a four, in part because I identify Keegan Murray as a four.
Yeah, and the matching salary is another challenge as well. They would probably like to move on from Holmes at this point, and Holmes maybe could use a fresh start and could be better elsewhere, but like, they're not going to want to move Malik Monk. And Davion Mitchell, if somebody values him, he's had a really disappointing year, but they would need some kind of a backup guard, and he does give them a little something defensively, at least. Like, Terrence Davis makes $4 million, Alex Len makes 3.9. So, you know, you might be able to get to a Crowder, but it seems like, again, the Suns, like, if they fall out of it, then maybe 2 seconds for Crowder or something. Like, okay, the Kings could, in theory, trade a 26 and 28 first that, if that 24 pick does roll over, could go back to 27 and 29. But, you know, a team might be wary that the Kings could Kangs and not actually allow that Herter pick to go, and then that some of these later picks would be imperiled. But, you know, I think you could probably say they could make an offer with 2 firsts, and we'll see. Maybe they could even get the protection taken off the Atlanta pick if that's what they wanted to do. So, you know, obviously, like, an OG Anunoby would fit amazingly in Sacramento, right?
And, sure.
You know, Barnes is going to be a free agent, but they could probably still bring him back at that point. But although I think if the Raptors are willing to take back Holmes, who has 2 more guaranteed years after this one, one of which is a player option, like, Holmes is, to me, is pretty significant negative value there. So using him as the matching salary becomes difficult at that point. And I don't know that 2 Kings picks would be enough to get someone like Anunoby. So I think ultimately they're probably hamstrung in terms of really making a significant upgrade, and they're already out this first round pick. Like, I wouldn't want to be out another first rounder, and now you really can't do anything for a very long time to get someone who's going to just be more of like a depth piece, or maybe like a middling starter to take Barnes's place or something.
Yeah, that's a big part of why I think this is going to be a more quiet deadline. You also have the issue, while Davion Mitchell has disappointed, the person who drafted him is still at the controls, and Mitchell still has plenty of time to improve as a player. He's not even close to being extension eligible at this juncture. I don't think Shemze Metu or Kazi Akpala are exciting enough to really get a team interested. And then, like, could you maybe do something with Terrence Davis? Yes, but I don't know that another team is more excited about Terrence Davis to really make something happen. So for me, Sacramento, I wouldn't be surprised if Monty McNair is making calls. I would be surprised if they did something significant. And the other weird part of this is Harrison Barnes. I mean, he has been a focus of mock deadlines and our deadline stuff and our offseason stuff for years, and in part because the Kings don't have a great way to replace him, and in part because, and now, especially now that they're competitive, and it's part because, like, well, what else are they going to do? Like, they could do something there, but I don't know who's clamoring for Harrison Barnes, and, I mean, the time to trade him was 2 years ago, more than now.
Yeah, and again, who you're going to get that's going to be better than him, I'm right. Not really sure. You know, another thing that occurred to me is try to go get like a Matisse Thybulle or a Cam Reddish, a second or third draft in the case of Reddish guy. But those at that point, you're kind of like, hey, if you really like this guy, why don't you just like use your mid-level on him in the offseason? Rather than, because, and if you're the Sixers, are you going to say, all right, we'll take a second for Matisse Thybulle? If you're Sacramento, you probably wouldn't give up, say, Davion Mitchell for him. That's really the only expendable young guy that they have. So they do seem to not really have great options here. You know, could they try to get their hands on like a Gary Harris, who maybe could shoot and just be a better point of attack defender than Davion Mitchell is? You know, that might be another guy that might be that might actually make a little bit of sense for them. Harris makes $10 million, so you could probably cobble together that salary pretty easily. But again, if you're Orlando and you're trying to get better next year, Gary Harris is non-guaranteed for $10 million. Like, they're actually been starting him recently. So are you, you know, take like a second for Gary Harris? Like, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense, but you also would just have Gary Harris around. He's a good vet who competes and can help you next year.
Right. So yeah, that's what, that kind of goes in line with what I was saying about how Monty McNair will make calls, but it's hard for me to imagine something significant actually happening.
Yeah, and you know, if Gary Harris were a free agent and he told the Magic he didn't want to come back, then yeah, maybe you get the second for him, but he's not guaranteed for next year. So there's no reason to rush that decision now.
For sure, especially not for an uninspiring return.
Are we done here?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, this is two divisions in the books here. That will do it for our week. Fifth podcast is done. John and I recorded with our All-Star picks. Danny and I will get to, if he has any significant changes in his picks, we'll talk about that next week. And thanks so much for being subscribers. We'll talk to you all soon.